It's interesting that over the years, many people have commented that if you're in the legal profession, either as an attorney or as a judge, or if you're in the security services or really anything that has to do with the conduct and control of the conduct of persons largely unknown to you, you better develop an appetite for strong liquor, among other things. But tonight, the discussion is the ever-escalating push toward the legalization of marijuana and how that might actually help us rather than hurt us. It might not be the what was that outrageous movie? Reefer Madness, where everybody who smoked the weed went instantly just absolutely crazy, and it really was quite a horrifying presentation designed to discourage that sort of use. Didn't work very well, did it? We'll be right back with Judge James P. Gray on a Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. Judge Gray, I would think that after so much exposure to the human condition and the frailties therein, you're probably a pretty good psychologist at this point as well. I'm sure that you've developed a finely tuned ability to read people pretty well. And I'm just curious, if you don't want to go here, then that's okay. We don't have to. But why, in your opinion, does the human being seek to get high and even stoned?
Well, John,
is it escape or is
there? But you know, people do relax by taking various mind-altering, sometimes addicting substances, or you know, even coffee. They drink that and it wakes them up, spurs them. That's addictive. Alcohol, again, my drug of choice. I had a couple of glasses of wine tonight. It relaxes you. Other drugs, you know, there are benefits of taking any of these drugs. And I'm sorry to have to say that, but it's transparently true, because if there weren't, people wouldn't take them. But, you know, if you start getting reliant upon them, then you're going to have a medical problem. And again, you should get closer to medical professionals that can help you. Robert Downey Jr. is a good example, where a very successful actor, and I applaud him. I think he's doing quite well now, but he is addicted to heroin. And he's going to have to be careful, and he is, because he'll have those cravings. Some people are more addictive personalities than others. But it makes as much sense to me to put Robert Downey Jr. in jail for that problem as it would have Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem, of course.
Sure.
You know, it's the same thing. That's a medical issue. But if Robert Downey Jr., Betty Ford, honestly, you or I drive a motor vehicle, for example, impaired by any of these drugs, heroin, cocaine, alcohol, whatever, that's a crime. So that's, again, where we need to direct our attention. So all of these things. And if your parents are alcoholics or have had alcohol problems, be careful, because it can be genetic. Some Native Americans, you know, they seem to lack a gene, so they don't process alcohol as well. So these are medical problems. Putting people in jail for them, if they're not harming anyone but themselves, though, is silly, counterproductive. And then, John, another critical issue, and I'd see this on the bench with great frequency, a lot of people that are mentally ill self-medicate with cocaine, with methamphetamines, with marijuana, and what we do is put them in jail, very expensive, doing untold damage to these mentally fragile people, and instead we should, you know, help them with treatment, which is far less expensive, both financially as well as human. So you have quite a seat watching the human drama, even the human comedy, as a judge, and you see these things. And that's why I came out publicly. It was more than 21 years ago now, speaking against our nation's drug policy, just spreading the word. When I sign my book, frequently I'll just sign it, it's okay to discuss drug policy. And it is. And once people start realizing this, they will demand a change, just like I have.
Yeah, I don't recommend smoking a big doobie and then going flying your airplane or something. That seems extraordinarily risky. I suppose
that's
it would
right.
be
it's
all
like
right.
You don't want to drink a martini before you do either. It's the same thing
no.
like alcohol.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything's fine unless something goes wrong, and then the interest is going to compound rapidly. You know what I mean?
Indeed.
It's going to be bad. This is very interesting, and I'm really delighted that you're on the program. Going back to this Amsterdam thing, for a while, They did not permit in the Amsterdam Arena yet 35,000 over two consecutive Saturday nights. They would have the white edition. Everyone would dress in white, and you'd have the black edition, which was more hard style music, and everyone would dress in black, and they were part of the evening, and the thing would sell out instantly. 35,000, the most really beautiful and well-behaved people that you've ever seen, with very little trouble. Then they decided that it's like, well, this ecstasy thing is a problem, which was legal in this country for a while, and then they put it on the list. So they said, okay, no more ecstasy. We'll let them have alcohol in there. And they didn't before. And the legislators got together and went, wait a minute. Look, when these people are taking this ecstasy, he loves everybody. He thinks everybody loves him. And now we got them drinking, and they're brawling out there. So what are we going to do about this? And they really went round and round about it for quite a long time. I'm not really sure how it was resolved, but it came to their attention that we're getting the mellow people all jacked up by letting them drink. They're getting drunk and hitting each other. This is not good.
Sure.
They're such an interesting, it's such an interesting culture, really.
Well, it is. And, of course, there are some people out there, and you've seen them and I have, that just use alcohol as an excuse. They're basically kind of violent-prone people. And then when they drink, that they just think that gives them that excuse. On the other hand, and during the campaign, during the Republican, Libertarian campaign for vice president I was on, I had the really interesting experience of basically being in Woodstock. But there was a retreat in Monticello, New York, upstate New York, that was actually just like Woodstock. And there were people there, older hippies wearing tie-dye shirts and all the rest, and people were smoking marijuana. There wasn't a problem in sight. Now, there weren't any police officers in sight either. They were just living their lives the way they wanted to, and good for them. You know, there's no reason at all. It's not my lifestyle, but if that's what they want to do, they're not harming other people, let them alone. You know, it's just fine. And the same thing with drinking alcohol. As long as they're not bothering other people, they're maybe causing some cirrhosis of the liver to themselves. But then if you look at cigarettes, you know, cigarettes clearly are the biggest killer for the user. We lose something in the order of 400,000 people a year in our country alone that smoke cigarettes to cancer or various other things of that kind. But we are making progress in reducing the number of people smoking cigarettes today by honest education, not by making it illegal, but having mores, social mores, regulations. You know, you can't smoke cigarettes in a lot of buildings, the rest of that sort of stuff, and just telling people the truth. And they're naturally cutting down on cigarette consumption themselves. That's what we should do with these other drugs as well. Tell them the truth. We have been lying to mostly our kids about marijuana for years. And then when we tell them the truth about cocaine and methamphetamines, they don't believe us, and nor should they. So we've got to engage in truth-telling about what the harms are, what the benefits are, and tell people, of course, that they're going to be responsible. Their bodies will not forget. I don't care if the drug is legal or illegal, your body will not forget, and if you abuse it, it's going to then adjust accordingly. So these are things that work, and that's where we need to go, all the while remembering that it's the drug money that's creating so much havoc. You know, how much corruption can you buy for $1 million in cash? And the answer is a whole bunch at any level of society, and we see that as well. Not with liquor, not with cigarettes, but with these other illegal drugs, and the money is the huge problem.
You know, looking at page 122, chapter 3 of your book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, you've written that other intrusions into private lives that have resulted directly from the war on drugs include the current prohibition on participating in any kind of financial transaction involving more than $10,000 in cash, whether or not drug-related. To do so now is a violation of our federal structuring laws, which are trying to control and detect drug money laundering.
Yes. If you
so they can just take it away from you.
Your used car, and more than I were to pay you more than $10,000 in cash, totally unrelated to drugs, doesn't matter. That is the crime of structuring, and I could lose the money, and I could also go to jail. It's all because of the war on drugs. It is the biggest source of loss of freedoms in the history of the United States of America. because of the war on drugs. And are we in better shape today because of it? No, we're not. There, it is an attack on our soul, which is our liberties and our freedoms, and we're losing those freedoms to the government, again, because of the war on drugs. You know, we have an initiative. It's Our America Initiative, Governor Johnson and I have, and others, for freedom. And you can go to ouramericainitiative.com. I think you'll like what you see. Spread the alarm. You lose your liberties to the government, you never get them back.
What is that website again?
Well, it's ouramericainitiative.com.
I'm writing it down. Okay.
Or there's a toll-free number, too. I just happen to remember, 800-662-9601. These are things people need to take them seriously. And the governor and I are going around the country talking to universities because kids get it, you know, not only for these issues, but our economy, all kinds of different things that our government, big government, is just not doing right. We all know the federal government doesn't have all the answers. I think, John, you'd agree with that, and so would everyone else listening. Let's let the states do these things. Let's get the federal government out of it and let each state decide how best to serve and protect its people, just like we did when we came to our senses and repealed alcohol prohibition. And then, yes, some states will have spectacular successes that we can copy, and others will have disappointing failures that we can avoid. We'll figure out how best to do this and get the federal government back to where it should be, assisting the states in making their decisions.
It sure seems like this government is just growing by leaps and bounds.
Truly. Yes.
I really don't know where this is going to end, but I don't think it's going to end well, particularly for them. I think everyone should keep in mind that the government, the big machine, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, these are just people. That's all they are. I was speaking with a friend of the program, Ty Bollinger, and he said, you know, they're not demigods, and they're certainly not gods. They're just people. Yes, but Judge, why do we? I'm just going to ask. This is crass, but it's like, why are there so many idiots in government? It seems like it takes a person of intelligence to invent something, structure something, build something, but it doesn't necessarily seem to take a lot of intelligence to be a politician and wield a pretty good-sized stick on the population.
Well, you start feeling that you are supreme. You start feeling like you're really powerful, and of course, in many ways, you are. And it's a disease. I mentioned Mr. Obama a little while ago. Let me be fair and equitable and talk about George W. Bush, which you mentioned as well, John. And he had pretty much acknowledged he used cocaine. While he was governor of Texas, he signed legislation mandating anyone that uses cocaine must go to jail a minimum of 180 days. Precisely what he has done. Now, Mr. President, would that have helped your career? So, you know, it needs the people. You go back to Thomas Jefferson, certainly a hero, who says that, you know, if the people are afraid of their government, that's tyranny. If the government is afraid of their people, that's democracy. And we're much more in the former camp than the other. It's time for us. I'm a libertarian and proud to say so. We stand up for reduced government. We stand up for less intrusion, less expensive government, and more financial independence, as well as individual responsibilities. I'm proud to be a libertarian.
Yeah, I'll wear that badge myself. It sounds really good to me.
Well, and more people, we are in the mainstream of American political thought. We're both financially responsible and socially accepting. And that's pretty much where about 85% of the people are. So it's just a question of showing that we're viable. Had Governor Johnson and I been in the presidential debates in 2012 election, I think we would have been highly competitive, if not winning, because we would do what the people wanted, that financial responsibility, which is totally absent regardless of Democrats or Republicans, and socially accepting, which is also the way most people are. And we would put in a coalition government as well, independents, libertarians, but also Republicans and Democrats. Anyone who embraces that philosophy, anyone that has a good idea, we'll give them all the credit in the world. You embrace a good idea, let's work together for America instead of all of this bipolar politics going on in Washington today. So it is a disease, and I think you're right to call it that.
It appears that Would I be correct in assuming that you feel like if we just let the marijuana thing just go on and legalize, decriminalize it, that might stop a person from seeking harder drugs? Might be the pot's fine. We're good with that. And
many ways.
You really believe
yes,
that?
John. Yes, I really do believe that. Portugal, you know, they fewer people were using alcohol. More people actually use marijuana, which honestly I think most people would agree is a far less harmful choice. And by the way, they had traffic fatalities in Portugal go down about 10-12% because yes, marijuana can impair you, but not to the degree that alcohol can.
Well, that's for sure.
It's a net gain. No one has ever died in the history of mankind from an overdose of marijuana, but of course people die all the time from alcohol and various other drugs. So, about the
worst thing they do is drive too slow.
Yeah, well, that can happen too. I'm not saying, you know, drive a motor vehicle impaired by anything, but if you had to choose between abusing marijuana on the one hand or abusing alcohol on the other, I'd much prefer that my family members would abuse the marijuana. It's far less dangerous in so many ways.
Which country has someone,
I've never used marijuana, and I'm not particularly interested in doing it, but I think it's a fact.
I get it, and you know, that actually lends so much, you know, credibility, you know, visible credibility to your argument, because you're not a proponent of it based on your own experience or any self-interest in that regard. I'd be curious, which country has the harshest drug laws? I know that if you're caught smoking pot in Mexico, they'll clobber you hard.
Well, they've actually gone to a decriminalization in Mexico for personal use.
I can tell you
that the United States of America has the most rabid policy, most harsh policy of drugs than any Western industrialized country. And we have a bigger drug problem than any other Western industrialized country. I'm convinced there's a connection, again, because of the glamour and because of the drug money. And one more thing, you know, from the bench, you see that the tougher we get with regard to nonviolent drug offenders, John, literally the softer we get with regard to the prosecution of things like robbery, rape, and murder, because we only have so many resources in the criminal justice system. And if we're spending them on nonviolent drug offenders, we're literally not spending them on people that are causing us harm. And even one more thing, you see, probably the most effective thing we could do, legislation we could pass for the safety of our law enforcement officers, would be to repeal drug prohibition. When we finally repealed alcohol prohibition, homicides went down the first year by 40% and continued to go down for numbers of years thereafter. The same thing would happen when we repealed drug prohibition. And our officers, our law enforcement officers' lives would be much, much safer. So again, it's just one thing after another. Why we're just doing it wrong, just a question of allowing us to discuss this. And just because now we've been doing this for an hour and something doesn't mean we condone drug abuse. But just because alcohol is not illegal, that doesn't mean the government condones it. Cigarettes either. We don't condone it, but it's there. Let's regulate it and control it. Tax it, use those monies, and take away a whole bunch of money from some really bad people in our society that now are just laughing at us and making hundreds of millions of dollars a year tax-free and causing the corruption that goes with it.
This is a very well-written book that you've put together, and you have three altogether. Wearing the Robe, War on Drugs is another one, and Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. And the judge's website is Judge Jim Gray, that's GRAY.com. Just judgejimgray.com. Can we get your book through the website?
Yes, indeed, or Amazon, or electronically, Barnes & Noble. And thank you for that. Honestly, it was endorsed by George Shultz, former Secretary of State of Ronald Reagan, Milton Friedman, who's certainly a hero of mine, Walter Cronkite, who is certainly a magnificent figure, and Governor Gary Johnson while he was the governor of New Mexico. So I'm really proud of that. I worked hard on it. And we just have a new edition that came out last year, 2012. So I really do think that it's something that will engage people in the conversation. And I document everything I say. So thanks for that, John. I appreciate it.
Well, it's good stuff. It starts with an historical perspective. Communities awash in illicit drugs, increased harm to community, erosion of protections of the Bill of Rights. Where's Paul Revere? Increased harm for the future, increased zero tolerance education. This is a good book. You should, anyone who's interested in this subject should definitely avail themselves of a copy of Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What You Can Do About It. And that's Judge Jim Gray, GRAY.com. Man, the time is going by so fast. Let's bail and do this break. We'll be right back with Judge Jim Gray. Thank you very much. We have a bank of calls. We'll not be able to get to all of you, but please hold your position. And my buddy, Jack, I think he's in the UK. He says, legislative apathy on the subject of egalitarian marijuana. How many U.S. Congress members are afraid for their lives should they come out for legalization at the hands of the drug lords? Now, there's a good one. We'll run that past Judge James P. Gray when we come right back with your calls and the good judge on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by, please. All right. Remember his website, judgejimgray.com, G-R-A-Y. And avail yourself of a copy of any of his three books. But this one we're discussing tonight is Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. What about that? I wonder if there would be some people up in positions of power who might be subject to duress by cutting off the funding to some of the cartels. Those guys aren't squeamish about getting somebody's face or screwing a pistol in somebody's ear.
And that's true, John. You're talking hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. We actually lose more money from our shores because of drug prohibition than anything short of oil. So we're talking staggering amounts of money. And honestly, if I were a drug lord in Mexico or elsewhere, making hundreds of millions, I'd be very content to spend $8, $10, $12 million to protect my market share. So yes, they certainly are involved in violence. They're certainly involved in corruption. They're certainly involved with huge amounts of money. So that's a significant issue that Jack has brought up.
I'll tell you what, isn't it amazing how a society can paint itself into a corner with the laws that they enact? You know, I just have to ask you this question, and we don't have to go here either. I don't want to be crass. But what does being a judge do to your head? I mean, does a judge experience a lot of recrimination or, oh, that was a bad call? Or, I mean, what is it like when you literally hold a person's future in your hands, a bang of the gavel, and it's a done deal, you know?
John, it's hard. It's sobering. I had a hand-printed sign on my bench for most of my 25 years on the bench saying there can be no peace in a land without justice. And that would remind me that every decision I made was important to somebody, for the reservoir of goodwill, etc. And if you think about it, looking at some litigant and saying, you lose because I say so, is not particularly satisfying. You know, people are prepared to lose in a civil case or otherwise, as long as they feel that the judge was listening, was not arrogant, explained the decisions, they're prepared to lose as long as they feel they got a fair trial. And I tried deeply to be able to do that. And I'm proud. I think the vast majority of our judges try the same thing. And by and large, I tell my jurors that the more you see our civil justice system and our criminal justice system, I think the prouder you will be of us. Could it be better? Absolutely. But under the circumstances, I think we do a pretty good job. But there are some that get what we call robitis, that they really start feeling kind of like people elected to Washington or et cetera you were talking about, and they simply start feeling that they are king. And that is not a good thing. But at least there's you can appeal. If I'm in trial court, you know, you can appeal. Very expensive, time-consuming, but at least you know that. And, I have taken children away from custody of their parents. My goodness, what a serious thing to do. On mental health calendar, I could have people literally strapped down and injected with psychotropic medication, mind-altering drugs, you know. But we took it seriously, and you just listen. You weigh the options. You look at the law. You try to apply it. And my father was a judge as well, John, and he told me when I began on the bench, Jim, what you're proposing to do violates your instincts, think about it again, because probably your instincts are correct. And by and large, I think that would be the case. But it's I was blessed to have the job. I I think I did it pretty well, I think that most of my fellow judges are the same.
That was music to my ears and many others, because we all, you know, we in many cases pray for a good judge. Let's take a couple of phone calls if you feel like it, and then okay. And then leave room for some closing remarks. Let's talk to Josh in Illinois on wild card line number one. Josh, come on the bridge and talk with myself and the judge.
Good morning, Josh. John D. Wells.
Good morning.
Joaquin loves you. Love the show, man.
Excellent.
Yeah, I actually had some questions on, like, I just heard recently that the Illinois House did pass medical marijuana. And I was wondering, like, implications, like, in terms of how other states did it and how Illinois would kind of go along that route.
Okay. I don't know. Can you extract the question out of that, Judge?
Yeah, I certainly can. Josh, I am pleased to say that we have, I think it's about 18 states now, plus the District of Columbia, that have passed medical marijuana laws. And I'm completely convinced that marijuana is a viable medicine for people. I was actually in a medical marijuana dispensary one time, just arbitrarily went up to one young man, said, "Why are you here?" And he said, "Well, about 6 months ago, I had a very severe motorcycle accident, did real damage to my spine. And my doctors had me on so many narcotics, I was in a haze, I couldn't function. And by the way, I got about 3 or 4 medical seizures a day. A friend recommended medical marijuana. I've been doing it for a couple of months now. I've weaned myself off all of the narcotics. I'm living pretty much of a normal life, and I only have maybe 1 or 2 seizures a week." So, Josh, in a lot of ways, you know, John and I were talking about the stepping stone or the gateway theory. Marijuana is a reverse gateway. It actually brings people down from narcotics and puts them back into marijuana, which I think everybody should agree is a good thing to do. So I applaud Illinois, and they've joined a lot of other people. In this case, California led the way in 1996 with Proposition 215, and it's expanding. I also, of course, applaud the states of Colorado and Washington for passing, in effect, recreational marijuana, regulating and controlling it, treating it just like alcohol, which is where it belongs.
That's excellent. Let's talk to Buck on wildcard line number 2 in West Virginia. Buck, are you there?
John,
yeah.
I respectfully request permission to hoist up the John B. sail.
Permission granted, my brother.
Anyway, my father was a sitting judge in West Virginia, and we're always, like, last on the list of everything. But in 2005, along with one of his colleagues, another judge, they set up a adult drug court. And it's proven to save the state thousands of dollars, you know, by diverting people, drug and alcohol offenders, from the criminal justice system to what's called a day report system. And it's really centered on helping to change behavior, not to punish these people. And I just wanted to know if Judge Gray is aware of that, if this is happening over the country, you know, in other states. Is this something that's being talked about or even enacted in other places or just here, little old West Virginia?
Buck, I am proud to say that I probably put in the first drug court in the country back in 1984. That was for alcohol-related offenses. Since then, it's spread the country. There are hundreds of drug courts now doing exactly what you said, and I'm going to ask you to give your dad a hug for me and congratulate him. Drug courts work. They're pretty labor-intensive for judges and staff, but they give people hope. They give them responsibility. They also congratulate them when they do well. You know, look, if you had somebody that's a cocaine addict, for example, and they've been an addict for 5 years, and if they even stay off cocaine for a week, you know, that's a benefit. That's really good stuff under the circumstances. Yes, I put people in jail for short periods of time and pat them on the back and say, "I know you can do better, Charlie, next time," and all the rest. But drug courts work, and they've spread the country. law enforcement went into it kicking and screaming. They didn't want it to happen. They originally only would allow it to happen for nonviolent offenders, when at least that's the way we got our foot in the door and showed people how they work. But let's use drug courts for people that are causing harm. You know, let's put burglars on drug courts and people that are assaulting others. They're the ones that are causing harm to other people. But the answer directly to your question, Buck, is yes, I'm proud of it, and it's worked very well, just like you say.
Excellent. Thanks for the call, Buck. Judge, this is a little bit of a problem for me, and I'm sure to many other people. The FDA routinely approves drugs that wind up being advertised. If you have taken Zologlob or whatever and have been subjected to armpit bleeding and all these god-awful symptoms, you may be entitled to money damages. I'm sure there are some people, myself possibly included in that group, who would submit that our government is the biggest drug dealer of them all, and they are approving drugs that are clearly harmful and causing all sorts of injury to people. For a law firm to take them to court, and most cases actually get damages for their clients. How do we reconcile pot being illegal while the FDA continues to approve drugs for? I understand the entry fee for that club is about $1 billion, and your drug will be approved.
It's about $800 million and an extra 5 years to get drugs approved by the FDA. But one, we were talking about hypocrisy earlier, John, and you just landed on another one, that marijuana, as we know, is a Schedule I drug, so labeled by the government, which literally means it's supposed to have no medicinal value whatsoever. Okay, I disagree with that, and I think that's clear. But Marinol, which is a synthetic marijuana, you know, it has a synthetic THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. It's a Schedule II drug, which means it can be prescribed. Well, now, wait a minute. They can't have it both ways. It's either no medicinal value for the real stuff, but does have a medicinal value for the artificial stuff. How can that be? And the answer is pharmaceutical companies cannot patent a plant. They can't make any money off normal marijuana, but they can patent a synthetic one, so they use their money to get the FDA as well as the federal government to approve Marinol, the synthetic stuff, so they can make money on it. Now, again, just flaming hypocrisy. Otherwise, the civil justice system works pretty well. And you know as well as I, what Underwriter Laboratories is. You know, it'll test toasters and microwaves and stuff and put the UL seal of approval on it. That's where we really should go with the FDA as well. And then allow these companies to go to the private, like Underwriter Laboratories, instead of this colossal bureaucracy we have with the FDA. And then if people put a drug on the market that doesn't work at that point, they should have the civil justice system after them for monetary damages. But it'll work an awful lot better than what we're doing today. Big government doesn't work. And in fact, they have every vested interest, if you're a bureaucrat for the FDA, to kick it upstairs, to kick it downstairs, not to approve it. Because if you approve 10 drugs and 9 of them save lives and help people, but the 10th one gives somebody a headache, you won't get any credit for the 9 that you approve. But who approved this last one? Your head will roll. You won't get a promotion, all the rest of that stuff. It's a big, colossal bureaucracy. I'd do away with the FDA in a lot of ways if I could, and done it done privately, which would be much more satisfactory all the way around.
You know, unfortunately, we're down to about 5 minutes here, but how can the people take action? I mean, it's not about all let the kids get high. It's like this monster has some really long-reaching tentacles, and I think that really after this conversation with you, I'm convinced that something as simple, and in some person's view, possibly silly, as legalizing marijuana could have some extremely far-reaching and very beneficial effects, let alone any beneficial effects from the drug itself. But what can the citizens do if they just decided to take it to the courts, take it to the legislators? I mean, do they pick it? Do they write letters? Do they email? What do they do?
All of the above, John. people who are politicians are really good at one thing, and that is followership. They'll follow where the votes are. And now, for the first time, the Pew Research Study poll came out and showed that more than 50% of the high-propensity voters believe that marijuana should be regulated and controlled. So just get out there, tell your legislatures, tell your mayors, tell your chiefs of police that it's time to regulate and control alcohol, marijuana, just like wine. And they will respond. I'm involved with a group called LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. By no means am I alone in this. There are lots of former police officers present, former judges, or present judges, prosecutors, etc. That, you know, the former chief of police of Seattle, a good man named Norm Stamper, is doing this, and the former chief deputy of police of Los Angeles Police Department. There are lots of us. So we're legitimizing the discussion. And it's amazing what one person can do. What you are doing, of course, and I applaud you for standing up for liberty and for reason, for getting the big government away from it. But you understand, John, again, it's just money. There's so much money involved in all of this that it's up to us as the voters and the taxpayers to look at them and to vote out people that would continue with this monstrosity called drug prohibition, as well as big government in so many other ways. So, you know, spending this time, you have a big listenership. I applaud you for what you're doing, and George as well. These are huge things, and the media has been delinquent on getting these words out. You, my friend, are doing a great job, and I thank you.
Well, you're doing all the work. I'm just a guy sitting behind a microphone, and I appreciate that compliment, but I tell you, it's
read my book, I guess, and I appreciate that too.
Well, it's a great book, and you can get it on Amazon and also on your site, Judge Jim Gray, and I'll just remind them that it's G-R-A-Y. Don't spell it like the color. It's not G-R-E-Y. It's G-R-A-Y. Let's see here. What do we got?
American spelling as opposed to the English spelling is the way I tell people. But
oh, gotcha.
Yes, indeed.
Well, that one is...
My goodness, it's been 2 hours that we've been together. It seems like about 20 minutes, but thanks for the opportunity. And good luck to us all.
Well, indeed, we could have gone four very easily. I hope to have you back. In fact, we'll plan to have you back as soon as we get some movement on this, which I suspect that we will. Do we dare take just one more? Let's talk to Donald on Wild 3 in New York. Donald, come on the bridge, but make it quick, bro, or the computer will slice us. Oh, Donald's gone. All right. Well, then, Lynn, Wild 4 in Western Texas.
Hi. First, John, thank you so much for the music you bring to the show.
Well, thanks. I couldn't believe that I actually played the pusher. I had to edit it, but we got it out there.
Your obscure tunes and being introduced to new tunes is just one of the greatest things in life to me.
Well, thanks.
So I thank you for that. And thanks for this topic tonight. I'm an old hippie. From 69 to 84, I had no problems obtaining weed. I was never a drinker. I was a freak, not a juicer. Due to family pressure, from about 84 to 93, I was abstinent from all substances. In 93, I began suffering illness, and I sought out old contacts for weed. From then until about 2005, I still had no problems obtaining good weed due to contacts dating back to the old days.
Right.
Finally, in 2003, I was diagnosed with MS. None of the pharmaceuticals that I was prescribed by, quote, medical professionals ever were helpful to treat the symptoms. In fact, the side effects were always worse than the symptoms. But weed did help with my symptoms. Weed was the only thing that helped with so many of the symptoms I deal with MS, including pain, muscle spasticity, sleep disorder, lack of appetite, nausea, digestive problems, and especially nowadays, anxiety. Mm-hmm.
Well, Lynn, thank you very much for your call. I hate to cut you short, doll, but we got to go.
Okay.
Judge, thank you so much for coming on this program.
Certainly welcome, John. Look forward to doing it again, and there's so many things to talk about. Appreciate the opportunity. And Lynn, good for you, and good luck to you.
Take care, Judge. Gosh, it's good to talk to a good judge. Oh, yeah. All righty, then. The website is judgejimgray, GRAY.com. And we'll be back. We'll be back with Doug Fine right after this. This is Coast to Coast AM.